Alive and Kicking with Claire McKenna. This is News Talk.
Yes, this is Alive and Kicking News Talk's health and wellness show. You can email aliveandkicking@newstalk.com or find me on Twitter and Instagram. I'm at Claire's Lair. Coming up, Rachel Lee of Ocean Breakers on how a lifetime of sea swimming has led her to help others to conquer their fears and take on the waves. Irish actress Lee Arnold, best known here for her role in The Clinic, now runs a retreat centre with her husband Steve in Ibiza, and she'll be joining me to talk about finding a way back to wellness after the tragic death of their son. And I'll be joined by the incredible Shannon Joyce from Cork. You'll find her on Instagram, Big C and Me, where she's documented her journey from the age of 19 with cancer. She's now facing it for the third time, and you will be blown away by her strength. So what kind of a health and wellness week did I have? Well, it was a good one. However, it is irking me that the corona cases are on the increase, so I'd have to start this health and wellness show with a reminder to keep up with the guidelines, however much they are doing your head in. And I know everyone wants to return to a normal life, but what we have now is golden compared to full lockdown. So stay sensible, keep your distance, wear a mask, wash your hands, and I do know most of you are doing this. Thank you to all of you who emailed during the week about Garth, who was on last week's show talking about he and his wife's IVF journey. And also many of you got in touch about Dr. Hans Arce from ReproMed, who was, it was just really interesting. I know it's a real stereotype that men don't talk about their feelings, but Garth really laid it out there about how it was for him and his wife from his perspective on struggling to get pregnant and going through the whole IVF journey from investigation to eventually getting pregnant. And also Dr. Hans spoke a lot about the emotion and minding the emotions of his clients. So it was a different take on it for me, certainly. I did have some dads get in touch to say that they hadn't struggled at all through the process, which is also good to hear. But most were in support of a lean to the male side of the story. And I also had an email from Declan, which I thought was interesting. He says, "Hi, Claire. I often listen to your show and I enjoy it. Thank you. Thank you. I enjoy doing it. One thing that often strikes me is your way of regarding us humans. You embrace the generally accepted view that our minds are somehow in control of and separate from our bodies. You seem to regard your body as almost an appendage to you, in inverted commas, that you need to look after. If you start to think about how our emotions affect our physical bodies, heartache, grief, joy, and how our bodies can affect our emotions with hunger, fatigue, lack of sleep, it may move you to see that we are one organism with our minds and bodies being part of a whole being." Candace Pert, who was an internationally recognised neuroscientist and pharmacologist who published over 250 research articles on the mind-body medicine as a legitimate scientific research in the 1980s, puts it rather well. She says, "Most psychologists treat the mind as disembodied, a phenomenon with little or no connection to the physical body. Conversely, physicians treat the body with no regard to the mind or emotions, but the body and mind are not separate and we cannot treat one without the other." So as I replied to Declan by email, I'm going to have to ponder on this one some more. I am completely a champion of the mind-body-spirit connection, and I do always believe that they are interconnected and all need to be at an optimum for optimum health. But he's right. When I'm talking about my various health endeavours on this show, I do speak about and probably think about my body as something I have to look after, as though it were separate in some way. How I change this, or if I even could, as yet I am unsure. You are listening to Alive and Kicking with Claire McKenna on News Talk. You can email aliveandkicking@newstalk.com. Irish actress Lee Arnold is best known for her role in RTE's The Clinic, and in recent times, interviews and articles on her have been more focused on the darker moments in her life. Herself and her husband Steve lost their second baby son Flynn to sudden infant death syndrome when he was just 2 weeks old, and not long after, her brother Nicky also died suddenly. Lee wrote at the time, "It made me put my life in perspective, and we decided as a family to take a step back and reevaluate our lives and what our hopes and dreams are, not only for ourselves, but for our children." Lee went on to become a patron of First Light, a charity supporting families experiencing death of young children, and she and her family moved to Ibiza, where they now live with their first son, Hunter, daughter, Piper, and newest family member, baby Honey. Lee and Steve also run Transformation Station, a wellness centre for retreating and resetting. And Lee is on the line now. Hello, Lee.
Thank you so much for that lovely introduction, Claire. I'm happy to be here to talk to everybody. How are you?
Well, forgive me for putting such poignant moments in your life into sentences like that, but I wanted to put them out there without having to haul you over the details of what happened in the interview. But it is something you've spoken openly about. And of course, you want Flynn and Nikki to be remembered and not to be a sort of a secret, untalked about thing.
Of course. Yes. Yeah. And it is. I suppose, you know, like anything, when you hear it, it is always going to give you that pinch, that sudden, you know, stop in your stomach and clenching and that gulp. Everyone that's been through grief and everyone, unfortunately, in this world, no one goes through life untouched. It is hard. But at the end of the day, life must be celebrated. You know, life must be celebrated as it is where we are now on earth and wherever they go to afterwards. And I think it's really important to bring the positivity of life into each other's lives. So, yeah.
And was wellness something that you turned to after tragedy, or was it a feature of your life before that?
Honestly, it was something that organically happened a couple of years sort of after we lost Flynn. I had gone down, like everybody usually goes, the conventional method. My GP would, at the time I was given antidepressants and various forms of calming things, you know, because the anxiety took over and the grief was so profound. And I realized after quite some time that my reactions to antidepressants just, they didn't feel good inside my body. And I realized they were suppressing things that I needed to come to terms with. And at the end of the day, this is a plaster that's just, you know, covering a much deeper wound that really, really needs to be managed. It will never go away, this wound. It's just a matter of coming to terms with things, dealing with it, and putting these things, these practices into our lives in order to make us just get through life in a positive manner, especially going through these things. And when we were coming to Ibiza over the years to visit friends, I was introduced to lots of different methods. I think I was first introduced to meditation many years ago when I started acting, but I really felt that I was ready to go down the path of really learning how to do it as a daily life method, as well as breath work, somatic therapies. And they sound so big and grand and terrifying, but really they're not. And these were simple little things that I was able to do for 20 minutes every day, half an hour every day, that I continue to do, and we do in our retreats and our online programs.
So when did it take that step on? When did yourself and Steve set up the wellness centre in Ibiza?
It's been the last year, and obviously everyone's lives have been all over the place this year, my goodness. And we were supposed to have our spring retreats at the beginning of the year, and that obviously didn't happen. But so it really just took itself on, really. We did a couple at the end of last year in November, and it's evolved now. But It's just been a recent thing that we basically came across a piece of land here that myself and Steve and the family moved into as a family home. And when we realized how, it's just the most beautiful piece of land. It's on the side of a mountain. It's overlooking a very sacred spot here in Ibiza called Benaras, which is a rock that people go to. All the hippies of the island go do their drumming on a Sunday evening to the sunset. And we just realized, you know, this is the most amazing space that people could come and heal. And we can have all these incredible people that have guided us for the past few years use this as a sanctuary to help people to come to terms with anything that they go through in life. I mean, it's not just about grief. It's people go through so many stresses, griefs of relationships, griefs of, you know, illness, problems in business, problems in life. And we just really want it to be a place that people feel that they can just reignite who they are and just try and find their purpose again.
Because your retreats focus on that, as you say, people who feel they need a shift in their life. So do people come ready to make that shift? Do they know what they need, or do they learn it when there?
I think that people and anyone that reaches out to us, and we've had an incredible response at Transformation Station. I mean, the amount of people that have reached out to us since we've gone online that just feel open and ready. I think people, especially during this time, it's really made people reevaluate their lives. So yes, there's already that the first contact that they make with us must mean that they want some sort of change, that they're ready to make a shift. Otherwise, they wouldn't get in touch with us in the first place. So that's step one, is just recognizing, okay, this might be something that I might be interested in doing. I haven't dealt with certain issues in my life. I'm a little bit mixed up, don't know what's going on. You know, people go through times where they just have lost their mojo, for want of a better word, or just feel a little bit lost and just need someone to help get them feeling back on track and stronger, both physically and mainly. I mean, if you're strong inside yourself and you're feeling good inside yourself, the whole world around you and everybody benefits, you know, by you just recognizing to be grateful for who you are, because you've made the right decisions in your life by taking care of you. You must take care of you first before you can take care of anybody else.
And sometimes it's just about taking some time, isn't it? And getting 100%. Still, which is why a retreat or a weekend or a week away where you devote your time to asking yourself some of those big questions and obviously being helped in certain other ways by experts, but can be a good thing. And I think we've all got a bit of a taste of that when life slowed down and we weren't working as much and there were good parts to what came up, but also some uncomfortable questions came to the fore. When you get still, you get a lot of clarity.
Absolutely. And I think that that's the thing that people are most afraid of. You know, for example, my mum has been here with us in Ibiza since the beginning of lockdown. And she really respects and loves what we're doing and how it helped us. But actually, whilst she was here, she started doing little therapies daily. And she found, by doing meditations, breath work, stuff like that, she started telling her friends how she was reaping the benefits, how she felt so great inside. And a lot of other people of her age started getting involved. And we've had an incredible amount of people that wouldn't know, would think it was all hippy dippy mumbo jumbo stuff, who now are very much on a learning curve in their life, in their later life, and a lot of people who just really need that shift. But obviously, when you are alone and you are in your thoughts, it is uncomfortable. But it's really important, if you have the time, to go there, because once you just go there once, it really will unlock something that's really, really beautiful. It might let go of a lot of pain, but that pain needs to come out. It's really important to let that go in order for the sunshine to come out.
You've obviously had to make changes in recent months and move a lot of your services online. So how has that been?
So it's been amazing. We just really felt that because so many people are feeling isolated, feeling alone, feeling lost, and also with regards to their health, people just didn't know how to deal. You know, breath work fundamentally at the end of the day is helping build your immune system. That's what it is. And as well as opening up your emotions, it actually builds up so many other health benefits. And so we just decided it would be the right thing to do during the COVID period to basically bring TS Live online for free. So all of the therapists that we have here on our retreats are doing daily sessions, anything from Kundalini yoga, which is so light. It's stretching, it's involving breath work, to Pilates, again, very gentle, beginner's meditation, somatic breath work, which is a lot deeper. And we also do the unbelievable Wim Hof method, which has been scientifically proven to help boost your immune system, which is what so many people need right now, as opposed to going down necessarily the conventional medicine way. But if you're just protecting yourself from problems in the future and knowing how to deal with them.
Well, we're obviously all wondering how travel is going to work out over the next little while, but anyone being able to access online is amazing. And one thing is for sure, when we look at the future, there's going to be a big focus on health and wellness.
I think so. I think it was always there. Ireland has possibly, you know, the best practitioners in the world when it comes to wellness. We've always been a very organic a nation. You know, people are very into beautiful food. There's a soul in Ireland, and I think people are naturally there already in the country and have been all their lives. It's just over the last couple of decades people got into the rat race and thought that that was the most important thing. What's most important is you know, who you are and you know, what you drive or how much you're earning and da da da. And really, at the end of the day, that doesn't matter. And everybody knows that now. And I think people are becoming more aware of self sustainability. I mean, we are now growing our own organic vegetable garden, and all of the food that we have at our retreats has been cooked fresh from our garden. And I think a lot of people are going down that route as well, you know, where we realize we can't be so dependent on other things, but we've got to take care of ourselves should anything happen in the future. And number one, that starts with your wellness and taking care of your inner and physical and spiritual health.
So what's your own personal go-to tool to stay well?
Honestly, for me, it's meditation. Meditation has been my honest. It's been everything to me. I wake up every morning, try to before the children, and we'll do a morning meditation. So it's just, it's sometimes it's guided. Sometimes I just go inside and just have the silence. And it's just having a space on my own where I can just connect to how I'm feeling. If there's anything that's upsetting me, that I can kind of just have a little check-in with myself before the craziness starts. I mean, I have a busy house of three small children, you know, and we're doing a business and it's COVID. So life is pretty hectic in my household, as it is in so many households. For me to take that moment, and I have to grab it pretty early in the morning or when the kids are down at nighttime, but twice a day for me to do a meditation, a check-in with myself, breathing, deep breathing, is everything to me. If I didn't have these methods, I honestly don't think I'd be the person I am today.
And how has family life been then during lockdown? As you say, busy, and of course with three small kids, one of whom is a baby. But I can think of worse places to be hanging out with my family than Ibiza.
Oh, we're so lucky, Claire. It's beautiful, but like anywhere, I mean, you know, Spain has been pretty strict. We weren't allowed to even go 100 yards from our house. We're very lucky to have a lot of land where we are, so thank goodness the children could play on the land. But at the end of the day, we had many, many friends that are in apartments, and it was really strict. It's been very, very stressful for so many people. And at the beginning of lockdown, we were having torrential rain. When you guys were having your beautiful weather, we were actually having quite the opposite. So it was a stressful time. It really, I suppose, we've been on top of each other more than we'd ever been. As much as I adore my husband, I've seen more of him now over the last 3-4 months than I have in 10 years together, you know. So that had its challenges, as it has for so many people. But we've just got through it, and we've just thrown ourselves into the business and to the online business. And we're just so grateful that we've got so many people here in Ibiza that are wellness facilitators, who are our friends, and you know, who we check in with on a regular basis. So we're really in a lucky place.
Well, as you say, you've got a great team of experts who work with you online, and your courses are free until the end of July. If you want to find out more, go to transformationstation.org. You'll also find them on Instagram, and Lee is at Ibiza Mummy on there too. Lee, all the very best to you. And one day I really hope to be breathing and chanting in the gardens of your Ibiza retreat. We'll even go down to the rock and beat some drums. I would love that.
Oh yes, absolutely love it. Thank you so much, Claire. And hopefully I'll be seeing some of your listeners soon and checking in and seeing them online as well. So thank you very much for having me.
You're listening to Alive and Kicking with Claire McKenna on News Talk. You can email aliveandkicking@newstalk.com. Coming up after the break, Rachel Lee of Ocean Breakers on how a lifetime of sea swimming has led her to help others conquer their fears and take to the waves.
Alive and Kicking on News Talk.
You're listening to Alive and Kicking on News Talk with me, Claire McKenna. Now, Rachel Lee is one impressive individual. She holds the unbroken Irish record as the fastest person ever to have swum the English Channel solo in 9 hours and 40 minutes. She is Outsider Magazine's Woman of the Year. She is mum to twins Bruce and Lex and works full-time as a firefighter and swift water rescue technician based out of Phibsborough Fire Station in Dublin. Rachel also runs Ocean Breakers, a group of expert open water swimming coaches, helping people to get used to the waves with a particular emphasis for preparing for races. Ocean Breakers are also very much involved in ocean conservation, and Rachel is an ambassador for the EPA, Planet Passionate Ocean Plastic Cleanup and Clean Coasts. She's on the line now. Rachel, how are you?
Hi, Claire. How are you keeping?
I'm very good. I mean, when I put everything into a paragraph like that, I mean, you're quite the superhero. Not all superheroes wear a cape.
No, it's when someone plays it back to you, you're like, oh my, who is that person she's talking about? Because at the moment, like yourself, I'm just a mom to Bruce and Lex, and that's all. And the rest is just what else you do. But first and foremost, you're a mummy, isn't you? And that's just the way it is. Once you have kids, then that's it. That's your main job. And that else, you just juggle in between.
Yeah, well, I mean, double trouble, twins and twin boys. Yeah. So yes, it takes motherhood to a whole new level, I think. Tell me a little bit then about you and the sea. When did it become a big part of your life?
Well, I always swam. So I was very lucky. I grew up in a little mining town in Australia called Newman. So obviously it was very, very hot there. And there was a little, it was a pool there. And I just saw a girl swimming, won a trophy. I told my mom I wanted to do it. And that was it. Just went from there. So I started swimming basically in the desert where there was no sea around me. And then I kept the swimming up, came back to Ireland and was swimming there. And I'd always known about open water swimming and, you know, I'd seen the Liffey race and a few things like that. And then when I was 18, I just decided to, I stopped swimming at a serious international national level. And yeah, I started playing water polo, met some people, and then it just went from there. I started open water swimming and I've never looked back.
Because people listening will say, oh, Australia, oh, now I get it. Yeah, it's in the sunshine, I get into the sea all the time. Whereas in Ireland, no way.
No, but the open water community in Ireland is incredible. I mean, and that's what's so wonderful about swimming. I mean, you just have to be able to swim. You don't have to be able to swim meters. You just have to be able to float and stay in your depth. But you can be any age. And the thing about swimming is because it's so easy in your joints, that as you get older and we tend to get more illnesses and our muscles are sore and you're like, oh, I can't do those marathons anymore, I can't do this, you can always swim. And I meet people who are in their 70s, 80s, 90s getting in, and it's part of their routine. Now, I'm not saying they get in and swim miles, but they get in, they see their pals, they do a little swim for their head and their health, and then they have a cup of tea and they've gone, and that sets them up for the day. And I think that's what is most precious about it.
And Rachel, how safe is the sea? Because you can understand people's concerns. It's not as predictable as maybe a swimming pool. You've got different currents. You've got jellyfish, seals are a part of our swimming experience out near Howth.
Yeah, exactly. Well, the sea is very, very turbulent, and it is a very, very dangerous place without a doubt, because the conditions are so variable and they can change any second. Like, you can be out swimming in beautiful flat calm water, and within a couple of minutes, like a click, all of a sudden this wind comes from nowhere. It's really, really choppy, and if you're not used to it, it can be very, very scary. So I always say to people, before you go, check what the tides are. So the tides come in every 6 hours and go out, so you have two high tides in 24 hours. So you can get these apps called Tides Near Me, or you can just check them. Dublin Bay Boy do loads of information on Twitter, and you just see what time is high tide. And I would always recommend swim a couple hours before high tides. A lot of beaches have lifeguards, so even if you stay between the red and yellow flags, and if there's a red flag up, then you obviously you can't swim. If you go and you see the sea and it's churling and all you see is this white water or white horse, as we call it, just don't get in. I mean, no swim is worth. If you're a bit nervous getting in because you think the conditions are bad, well, then listen to your gut and don't get in. The other problem we have with our beautiful Irish water is the temperature. So at the moment, it's about 14 degrees, where for swimmers like us who swim all year round, that's fine. But that's actually really, really cold. And especially for children, you know, if they're not wearing a wetsuit, after a few minutes, like mine, they get so cold. And when kids get hypothermic or get cold, they just seize, stop, and they can't swim. And it's the same for adults. Hypothermia can come on so quickly. And when you feel your stomach starting to shiver, or your hands like a claw-like, or you feel like you're talking like you've had a stroke, it is so time to get out. And if you're not swimming parallel to the shore, if you've decided to go miles out, well, then you really are going to be in trouble, you know. And we don't want to be putting any emergency services under more duress that they are already on. So you have to swim. It's your responsibility is how safe you're going to be. So I always say swim parallel to the shore, have a high visibility hat on you, a tow float that you can hold on, swim with a buddy or have a spotter, have someone. You don't need to swim out miles. And then, like you said, we have the jellyfish season are in now. So the lion's mane, the compass are in. And when they give you a sting, it's really, 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 really painful. So there's a lot. But in saying that now, swim, it is beautiful, but just you have to be aware of the conditions and know the tides and talk to any locals that you're going down. So that's quite a lot there.
I mentioned your conservation work. How clean are our seas and our beaches at the moment?
Well, so our beaches are clean, but unfortunately with sewage, when a heavy rainfall, the pipes overflow. So then you're going to be left with perhaps some raw sewage in the waters. And the other main problem that we have again is people coming to the beach, bringing everything with them, which is absolutely fine, and just not bringing it home. I mean, if you bring rubbish down to the beach, just bring it home, put it in a black plastic bag. Again, be prepared, bring it back with you. People see the bins overflow, but just decide to put more to it. That goes back into the ocean. So most days, myself and the boys, and Tom, we always do a beach cleanup every time, and we always say pick three from the sea, do a 2-minute beach cleanup. I'm quite lucky because I'm ambassador for Clean Coast, so I have a lot of their plastic bags. I can ring Fingal County Council, and if I do a beach clean, I can leave the stuff beside the bins and they will come and collect it. But the amount of rubbish that we pick up is just horrific, whether it's plastic bottles, whether it's cups, you know, just what people leave is just, and now you can't use a reusable cup anymore. So obviously people want to have coffee and tea, and that's absolutely fine, especially after a swim. You want to have a warm drink, but I bring like my flasks with me. It's about being prepared, and it is very upsetting, especially now with the COVID and how many people are flocking to the beaches, which A, is wonderful. I love seeing families down there. But then I hate seeing when they go and all the rubbish left behind. And people are very quick to say, oh, teenagers, oh, kids. It's not, because my 7-year-olds are picking up adults' rubbish, and I find that is horrible. But I want the beaches clean for my kids, my grandkids, for everyone's children. I want them to have the same that what we have. So we work with Kingspan, who have this Planet Passion project, and are hoping to have 1 billion, pick up 1 billion plastic bottles and reuse them for their own materials. And so we are just really trying to advocate for that, and just for people to be aware, pick up your rubbish, bring it home. We have a lot of you can recycle an awful lot of rubbish now, so it's just to being aware of that.
So how do you juggle all of this ocean swimming, helping swimmers, getting in yourself, cleaning up beaches, with working full time for the fire service?
I don't really sleep, I guess. I suppose myself and Tom, we're very lucky. We support each other. We have great family as well. And he is very passionate, as I am, on what we do. My children are big into swimming as well. All my family, my friends, they're all swimmers. So we're quite lucky that we have that amongst us. I love my job. I'm very passionate about it as well. And it is tough. But I guess it's just, you know, like yourself, Claire, if you have a drive, you want to do something, you'll always find the time. We don't really go out very much. If we get a babysitter, it's so we can go for a swim together so someone can mind the kids, unless we've got to bring them with us and they're going to swim with us. So we just choose what we want to do. But it is every Sunday, especially when I was training for long swims, you know, you had to sit down, plan what you're going to do. I get up very early. I get up at 5 o'clock and I'd swim before work. When the kids were younger, if I had to get more sessions in, I'd swim at 8 o'clock when they were back in bed again. So it's just juggling your time and having a lot of support, but really wanting to do something as well, you know. And at the moment, the environment and climate change is something that I'm trying to not use much plastic as I can, and just make little changes and try and teach my children about it. That is something that I think is really, really important.
And I mentioned your world record in the introduction. What can you tell me of your memories of that day? 9 hours, 40 minutes in the water swimming the English Channel.
I don't have a world record for the English Channel now. The world record for the English Channel is like 6 hours by a guy called Trent Goonsby, who's amazing, an Aussie guy. I hold the record for Ireland for the English Channel. But last year, myself, my husband and Ronan, we swam the North Channel, which is from Northern Ireland to Scotland. And we broke the world record as a relay for the fastest person. The fastest time ever to get across. Three of us did that on the 29th of July last year. And that was, and we got a Guinness Book of Records award for it as well. So
you have the unbroken Irish record for the fastest person in the English Channel.
For the English Channel. Yeah, exactly. And then for the North Channel, we have the world record. So that was pretty cool. And we did that. We were sponsored by Kingspan and the EPA for that. Again, it was raising awareness for our plastic usage and what's happening in the seas at the moment. So we got a lot of awareness over that, and it was brilliant. Yeah, that was a tough swim now. That was really, really cold. And it was just full of linesmen. I've never experienced anything like it. So that was quite tough. But the cold, oh God, it was horrible.
It's a mental challenge as well as physical.
Yeah, it was. And I was actually, even though but when you're with, you know, your friends, your husband doing something, like, no one's going to quit. No matter how bad it is, not one of us is going to say we're not doing this. And we really enjoyed the training, and it was great to do something together, you know, rather than something solo. Like when I was doing the English Channel, Tom, he was very tough. Like the babies were only young. He couldn't train because I had to train. And it's quite a selfish thing. And he'd be, when I was swimming from April in the sea, he'd be pushing the double buggy up along. I'd be looking at him and I'd be swimming for an hour or two. And then I'd get out and he'd say, get back in the water for 10 minutes. And it's like, oh God, you want to kill him. Because he was coaching me for that and he was my mentor. So to do something together with Ronan and the three coaches from Ocean Breakers was amazing. Now we had to push each other a lot because the water temperature was quite cold. It was only 11 degrees. But yeah, we did it and it was brilliant. We're absolutely delighted.
Amazing. So what is your advice then for somebody listening who wants to get into the sea but just stands there looking at it, thinking it'll be too cold.
Well, we always say we don't say the cold word, we don't say the C word, but yeah, it is cold without a doubt. But acclimatization, and just get in, just even get in as far as your ankles, then get in as your knees, then just sit in the water. Don't be afraid to buy a wetsuit. A lot of people say, oh, wetsuits. Wetsuits are brilliant. They afterwards, you know, they give that extra buoyancy that keeps the heat in your body. Dexterity afterwards, especially if you've got children to go home to or go to work, you're not going to have that shivering. Because even if we swim and we're not cold, you still have a shiver afterwards, you know, and we're kind of used to it now. But just get in the water, especially with someone who can swim, and just go, actually, I'm okay. Obviously, go at a calm day. Go to somewhere where you can stand. Don't be going, like Killiney is a beautiful place to swim, but it's very deep. Portmarnock Beach, you can actually just stand as far, you only have to stand in water as far as your hips and you can swim. You don't need to go out of your depth. You can contact us on Ocean Breakers.
What I did wrong for years was only go to my knees or only go to my hips. I mean standing, I don't mean, but you have to submerge yourself in the water and you start moving your legs and arms and you get used to the cold. It's cold at the start and then all of a sudden something changes and it's lovely and you get such a buzz for the rest of the day. And if you're prepared, like you say, you've got your flask of herbal tea or coffee or hot chocolate or whatever waiting for you on the beach. People, some of them bring hot water bottles with them, have really warm clothes to get into, a hoodie, and then they're back in the car with the heating on. Well, then you're kind of laughing. You'll warm back up and you don't have to spend 9 hours and 40 minutes in there like you do.
No, you don't. And the thing is, when you get in the water as well, is move. You know, if you just stand in the water, of course you get cold. But if you, that's where you see kids, they're running around, they never get cold because they're constantly moving. You know, afterwards, of course, you would get cold, but you'll be prepared, but you'll have all your warm clothes, loose warm clothing, big coat, and leave your swimming hat on last. Take that off and then put a hot a woolly hat on you. And you'll just be delighted. You'll have that cold sensation, but you'll feel delighted that you did it. So we do a lot of clinics as well.
Well, for more, you can go to oceanbreakers.ie. Rachel Lee, thank you very, very much.
Oh, thanks so much, Claire. It was lovely to talk to you and keep up your sea swimming.
You're listening to Alive and Kicking on News Talk with me, Claire McKenna. You can email the show aliveandkicking@newstalk.com. Coming up after the break, the incredible Shannon Joyce, who in her 20s is facing cancer for the third time. She documents her story on Instagram and her strength and positivity will astound you, particularly when you hear about the trolls she's had to face.
Alive and Kicking on News Talk.
I first came across Shannon Joyce when she was a guest on The Late Late Show alongside Georgie Crawford and Mary Cullen, each telling their experience of a cancer diagnosis. Shannon bravely, and I'd have to say absolutely beautifully, sat on the couch without her wig and was joined by her little girl, Roisin. Shannon first faced cancer aged just 19, and after being given the all clear, it returned 5 years later, soon after she'd given birth to her daughter at 24. Shannon was the face of the Daffodil campaign for the Irish Cancer Society this year and has documented her journey on Instagram, Big C and Me, with her positivity and her love for her partner Barry and their little girl radiating from every post, and her love for life. Shannon recently posted that the cancer had returned for the third time, but she borrowed the words of Jada Selner. It's okay to be a glow stick. Sometimes we have to break before we shine. Shannon is on the line now. Hello, Shannon.
Hi, good morning, Claire. How are you?
I'm good. You really were so brave and so beautiful on The Late Late Show that night. And I believe it was a last minute decision about the wig, was it?
We kind of were tuning for a while. I was saying, will I or won't I? And then I said, you know what, this is really a once-in-a-lifetime experience. It's an opportunity that I'll never get again. And we were on for a reason, to raise awareness. You know, the three of us were three mothers, different cancers, young women, and we all wanted to give our experiences. And I suppose I was never going to get that opportunity again to show people what cancer really is. Now, I know I spoke on Instagram without my wig and things, but I just thought, go for it. Let people see that it's okay to be bald, because it will come back, and embrace it, and don't let it get you too down, because it can, the hair loss really can be such a tough, and it can be detrimental on your mental health, I think, more than anything, because hair is such a big thing for women and men, I suppose, but especially women. I don't think we realise that, you know, our hair is really our crown, and we do take pride in it. And I suppose I just wanted to show women that it's okay if it's gone.
Definitely. Well, I think we learned from Sinead O'Connor that there are certain faces that just wear a bald head so well, and yours are one of them. But obviously with cancer, the baldness doesn't come by choice. But you're right to embrace it and just be brave with it.
Absolutely. And I think that was one of the main things. People always used to say to me, oh, you have a beautiful face for a bald head. And obviously it's a compliment and I'm always grateful. But like with the likes of Sinead O'Connor and things, you know, and people who decide themselves. I think my biggest thing was it was never my decision. It was always something that was taken out of my hands. And that was more of a mental thing that I struggled with, losing my hair, as opposed to, you know, a physical, how it looked. I suppose it was just the fact that it was taken from me as opposed to me giving it.
Yeah.
You know, I had no choice in my hair loss. And that's all cancer patients that are going through treatment. And even people suffering with alopecia as well, you know, that's something that's taken from them. So I think it's much more of a mental battle when that's the case, you know.
Well, I was struck then by your spirit, but also that you were so young to have gone through so much already. 19 was your first cancer diagnosis. That is just so young. And to be thinking about your health and your long-term health and treatment plans is not the usual for a 19-year-old, for a teenager.
Yeah, and it was, I suppose, like cancer was never, there wasn't a lot of people in my family that have ever gotten cancer, thank God. Like my grandfathers, both of them did have cancer, but, you know, I was younger, I don't really remember a lot of it. So cancer was quite new to us, I suppose. And then I was diagnosed and I had been in hospital and I had been quite unwell, but we really thought it was an infection or it was anemic or, you know, there was something kind of not as serious going on. And then when we heard the words cancer, it really hit the family hard, just being so young and trying to deal with it. And I suppose my parents trying to deal with the diagnosis as well as me. And looking back then, I thought that I was an adult and I knew everything, but like I really knew nothing, you know. I was really young, I was a baby. And I think my parents definitely sheltered me from a lot of stuff back then, because it's now when I'm going through it again is when I'm realizing how serious it actually is. Back then, I was really protected from it.
And then you got the all clear, but when you became a first-time mum 5 years later, it returned. So you had a lot going on at that time, because having a baby is a lot to come to terms with. But then you also had the return of the cancer.
Yeah, so it was then Roisin turned two. Now, I suppose, like, this cancer, non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, is known to be a recurring cancer, but kind of in the first year to 2 years. After 2.5 years, you kind of will say to yourself, all right, I'm okay now. You know, we've gotten to the 2.5 year mark. I'll be okay now. And I was 2 months out of my 5 year remission. So I really, really didn't think it was ever going to hit me again. I'd met Barry. In the meantime, we went on and we had Roisin, and we were just a normal couple living a very normal life, both of us working. Roisin being minded by her nannies at home, doing family things at the weekend. There was never anything out of the ordinary with us. And then one evening after work, I just found this lump. And it was all quite familiar. And I hadn't been with Barry the first time round. And I said, Barry, just it's the same kind of lump. And he, of course, was trying to help me to calm down and not panic. But obviously panic took over. And I think from the minute I felt the lump, I knew. And it was the same last week, Claire. I felt the lump again. And what's so scary about this, I suppose you could call it freaky. I was first diagnosed back in 2014 on the 4th of July. And I found the third lump last Saturday week on the 4th of July. So you could kind of say I knew again last Saturday on the 4th of July that it was back again. And my last diagnosis last year was actually today. Last year was the 16th of July. So it's all July. It's all a bit mad. It's so surreal, but it is what it is, and we will get through it, you know.
Each time you have faced it like that, how do you do that? What do you attribute to your strength and getting you through it?
Claire, I suppose, like, if I don't, I'm not going to benefit from it. If I lay down, I could die. You know, if I fight it, then I won't. Do you know what I mean? Like, that's what's in my head. The more fight I give to this, the faster it's gone, the faster treatment is over, the faster my life gets back to normal, and I hopefully don't have to deal with this again. Now, obviously, I really thought that was going to be the case last year. I had a transplant last November, and that's quite severe on the body. And I said, you know what, my body's been through the mill. Like, it's been poisoned to within an inch of my life. I've been completely poisoned with chemotherapy and other kind of medicines. And I just said, it's not going to come back now. And then it did. And then last week, I just said again to my family and Barry, we sat at home and I said, we could really just stay here, oh God, and we could feel sorry for ourselves, but we could also just get up and get the chemotherapy, possibly another transplant, and just get on with it. So that's what we are going to do. You know, we are going to just, and there's benefit from this one. The chemotherapy that I'm getting is a new drug that actually is specifically there to target my type of cancer. So that's a new drug again. You know, maybe it's just the last few cells needed that bit of an extra drug, and that's what we're going to do.
Well, you're listening to Alive and Kicking on News Talk with Claire McKenna, and I'm talking to Shannon Joyce, who in her 20s is facing cancer for the third time. And Shannon, you're just staying positive, but what you said there is so important. So are your medical team. When there's a treatment plan in place, what else can you do but put one foot in the other and do it with strength and positivity?
Exactly. You could stay in bed all day, and don't get me wrong, Claire, there have been days where I've said, no, I'm putting on Netflix and I'm turning back over, and I do that. And I always tell people, if they ever come to me for advice, take those days as well. Don't have a good day, don't have a bad day, just have a day. And if you need to get out and go for a 5 mile walk and clear your head and blow off the cobwebs, do that. If you need to pull a duvet onto the couch and watch Netflix, then do that as well. Don't take any guilt in it, because every day is precious for everybody. And I suppose you just kind of have to go with how you're feeling. And once your medical team, and I genuinely think I have one of the best oncologists in the country, and once he says to me, this is what we're doing, and this is when we're doing it, I'm happy. I walk out of that office and I'm happy. The worst thing about it is the waiting in between scans and results and waiting to see what we're doing. That's always the most anxious time for me, and that's the time I hate. But once I have a plan in place and I know what's happening, I'm not afraid anymore, and I know I can do that.
And your Instagram page is a great resource for people on a similar journey. I know it from friends who have had cancer, and guests who have come on the show have spoken about how amazing it is to be able to share information and then take strength for people who are going through and pushing through any illness. Is that why you set it up, or is that why you began to share your experience with cancer?
To be honest, the main reason I set that up last year was because I said to myself, my biggest regret from 5 years previous was that I didn't remember a lot of it, and I didn't have loads of pictures, and I didn't have lots of it documented. And you know, it was only as I was going through things, I was saying, oh yeah, sure, I did that the last time as well. You know, I didn't kind of have it remembered. And I myself and Barry spoke about it, and I said, I'd like to just document it, just to put it down somewhere and just to have it so I can reflect on it, and I suppose, you know, look at those posts a year ago and see how far you've come, kind of a thing. And that's what I really wanted to do. So I set it, my Instagram page was always there, you know, I'd always kind of been posting pictures and stuff. Now, I didn't have any following at all. It would be just friends and family. And then I started posting about cancer, and I did a couple of stories one evening, and I just said, look, I'm just going to talk about it because I think that people are very quiet about it and they shy away from it, and it's nothing to be ashamed of. It's nothing that anybody has done, and it can come to your door at any stage. And my main thing was I wanted to kind of encourage my friends and family to go for your breast checks, to go for your smear test, to go for, you know, any men that need examining or test. Don't ignore it, go for it, because I suppose being 19 or 20, you're kind of going, I'm grand, it's hardly cancer, you know. But I just wanted to show people that it can happen, and it can happen again. So just to get the word out there. And then people started sharing my Instagram page, and I was like, this is getting overwhelming. And like, I had 5,000 followers in a couple of days, and I was going, "Jamie, 5,000 followers, that's some amount of people." And it was so overwhelming, and it was great. But then I started getting messages from people saying, I've gone through a similar thing, or my daughter has gone through a similar thing. And, you know, it's really helpful to hear somebody else speak about it. And then it started becoming a bit of an addiction, that I loved hearing how much it was helping people and how comforted they were in seeing my situation. And they were taking positivity from it. And to be honest, that was just rewards in itself. And it was brilliant. And a year on, it's still the exact same, bar one or two things. But a year on, the amount of support and love that I get from that Instagram every single day, it blows me away. It really does.
Well, I hope the good outweighs the bad, because recently you shared some shocking trolling. I don't even know if we can call it trolling, because we think of trolling as somebody who writes something hurtful. But what happened to you took it a step further. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, so it was about 2 weeks ago now. I was sitting at home, and as usual, the post came, and I actually opened the door, and there was a package in the porch. So I had actually ordered little headbands from a shop. So I thought, because when I picked up the package, it was soft, and I thought, oh, these are the headbands. That was fine. I kind of thought no more about it. I opened the other letters that were there, and then I opened the package, and it was three baby grows, like baby vests. And Barry was actually at home because he was working from home that day. And I looked at him and I was like, Barry, look at these. I was like, isn't that so weird? But and it didn't click with me straight away. But the strange thing was there was like no tags, or there was nothing you could track, basically. You know, there was no packaging, there was no tags. I couldn't tell you where the vest, what shop they were even bought in. And they weren't in their original packaging. They were just kind of stuffed into this envelope. And I was saying to Barry, like, what is it? What, you know, this is really weird. And I actually thought it was a mistake, or maybe I didn't know what it was, to be honest. But I actually put a picture of them up on Instagram laughing about them, because I was saying, God, isn't this mad? I was like, I just got three baby vests in the post. And when I posted that, within, I'd say, a minute, I got a message. And what drew me to it, there was no profile picture from the page, or there were no followers or anything. So I went into the message and it was horrible. It just said, enjoy the vests. It's a pity you'll never get to use them. Ha, 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 ha. And like a little devil face. And I was like, oh my God. And then I kind of said, this wasn't done by accident. I said, somebody actually sent these to us, Barry. And he looked at the message and he was like, right, this is so weird. So I went to click into the page to try and see if I could salvage something, you know, like a link or a URL. Or so I didn't know what I was looking for, but I went into the page. And as soon as I tried to go into the page, it was gone. So they kind of waited till I seen the message and then deleted the page completely. So I suppose that was the Monday, and it was just horrific. I took a few days just to try to deal with it. I did speak about it on Instagram. I didn't know if I would or not. And I said, you know what, people need to know what other people have done, and this is awful, and I wanted to get it out there. And I did, and lots of people kind of took to the story and were appalled by it. And that was kind of okay. I was getting over that Tuesday, Wednesday. I was starting to come around with it. And then on Thursday, I started reading really horrible stuff about me on the internet, saying that I had made it up myself, and that I knew it would grow my following. And, you know, someone actually said she's not as dumb as she looks. She did this on purpose herself. She found those baby vests as she was clearing out the wardrobes and thought, oh, wow, what a great opportunity. And that really, that killed me. It really did, like, having people speak about me in that way, because I don't know who would be kind of not mentally well themselves to do that, but it certainly wasn't me, you know, and it really was awful that people were even suggesting it. So I took a break from Instagram and I left it there, and I wasn't feeling really well anyway, so I said I'm going to just put the phone away and forget about this for a while. And then I suppose on Saturday I found the lump, and I'd still been seeing people writing things going, she'd wanted to investigate it if it wasn't her and all this. And I wanted to write to them and say, I'm possibly dealing with cancer for the third time. I've just been put into perspective that anything you've been saying, or anything that people have sent me or wrote me and said, actually doesn't matter in hindsight, because I'm now dealing with something so much bigger and so much worse. And yeah, I suppose I haven't spoken about it yet, Claire, on my Instagram, because I don't want to give it any more of my energy or my time.
I know, and I'm sorry to even bring you through it again. I saw it online, and I've been trying to make sense of it since. I'm like, surely there's still a mistake. Some PR company sent it to the wrong place, or it was some mishap with the address. I don't know. I mean, look, it doesn't deserve our energy and thought, but why somebody would do that is just absolutely beyond me. And as you say, days later, you posted you were facing cancer for a third time. So what a time to be dealing with such crap and nastiness, but it puts it into perspective. But it's not all bad.
No, it's not. And the good for her outweighs the bad.
Yeah, well, absolutely. I don't know how you've made yourself so bulletproof, but I love that you have. And as I say, it's not all bad. You do have so much support around you in your own circle, but also online. Your friend and cancer survivor, Kieran Byrne, and his wife, Denise, set up a GoFundMe page to help you through the next while. I mean, that was incredible to see on the back of such sadness with that trolling. He set a target for €10,000 and it was deactivated at over €175,000. Yeah. So you have way more people behind you than against you. Now, that's just material support that'll get you through this time, so you can just concentrate on getting well. There's so much more beyond money. I hope you get the feeling that everyone is rooting for you and wishing you all the best, as I do.
Absolutely. And that was the thing, Claire. I was looking at it going, oh my God, there's so many donations coming in, and obviously the amount, it's life changing. It really is. Never in a million years would I have thought that, you know, I'd have that much money. Now, obviously, if I didn't have to do this again, I would give every single penny of it back. As you said, it's materialistic. But seeing the amount of people who donated, there was over 11,000 people who actually donated. And I kept saying, that's 11,000 people who went out of their way to put in their card details, to give me their own hard-earned cash and to support me. And I think that just showed me the five or six people who speak about me on the internet and who maybe send some nasty things in the post and messages, you're really very small, and it's a minority compared to the support that I actually really have. So look, as I said, it put things into perspective. I had been having major anxiety all week over this trolling and why me? Why are they doing this to me? What have I ever done? This is awful. And then I get another cancer diagnosis and I just think I don't need that energy or the negativity. That it was, you know, leave them do what they need to do, and I'll focus on myself and my amazing followers and the good people that I have in my life.
Well, keep going, Shannon. You're amazing, and I look forward to seeing you document beating cancer for the third time. You can follow Shannon's journey, Big C and Me. It's got lots of underscores, but search for Shannon with an E-N, Joyce, and you will find her there. Great to talk to you today, Shannon. All the best. Thank
Lovely
you so, so
you,
much.
Thanks for having me. Bye.
So that was Alive and Kicking on News Talk for this week. My thanks to my producer, John Fardy, to Jojo Cordoza on sound, and to you for listening. Vincent Wall is up next. I'll see you next week.